The University of Kansas Health System is proud to be the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Current. From youth athletes to the pros, we put player care first to turn their dreams into reality. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/kccurrent.
Now it's time for Very Serious Football Talk with the man who met his wife on a blind date, chaperoned by his parents.
They actually came along on the first date with us. There was a...
No!
I rode in the back seat. I was 22.
The man who needs to take a minute to remember the names of all of his children.
Do all of your kids have the same first letter?
No, actually. Let me think. Do any of them? Tucker, Mason, Cole, Isabel, and Lucas.
The man who can defend you in court, but will probably choose not to.
I'll cop to this on a public setting right now. I am an aggressive cuddler in a consensual sense.
Comma, officer.
Good grief, he's a pastor too? When does this guy sleep?
You will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
It's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on Almost Entirely Sports.
It's a Tuesday with the NFL draft just around the corner, although it feels like we've gone around a lot of corners, and there's still a couple more corners to go, and maybe it's actually a NASCAR racetrack. We'll talk about all that right here, right now, with Seth Kaiser of the Chief of the North newsletter at mnchiefsfan.substack.com, and of The Athletic, and of the Times Ours podcast, with myself and him and Nate Taylor. An episode of that will be coming out tomorrow at some point. Seth, how are you feeling right now at this point in the draft, potentially draft fatigue category?
You know, for me, draft fatigue doesn't ever really set in because I tend to just kind of skip around completely oblivious to the draft most of the year.
Right.
And then, so now this time of year, I approach the draft for the first time. And I'm like, wow, this is so cool. Look at all this content. Whereas everyone else is like, I've been looking at this content for months.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited. And I'm actually, for the first time in a couple of years, I think I might dive in a little more head first into some draft content. I only have like 2 weeks to do it. But I've got kind of a project in mind. And normally I just look at a couple of draft crushes. And this year I think I might kind of do a deep dive on a single position.
I like this a lot. You tweeted about this just a little while ago at RealMN Chiefs Fan on Twitter earlier today. And you were asking for tackle prospects because you want to try to go through, kind of skim the surface maybe on a bunch of those guys, and then do the thing that I love more than anything else in sports coverage, rank them. Oh, I love a ranking. It's the only good content.
Well, and one good thing about having a newsletter that I can make anything I want, subscription only, is I can guarantee you some of the stuff that I write will be unlocked, you know, a few of the reviews for the various linemen. One thing I guarantee you I'm going to lock is the rankings, because draft Twitter is not a forgiving place. And I have no desire to get caught up in any of those, I can't believe that you ranked this tackle three spots below this tackle. You should lay under a train. You know, like, I don't need that in my life.
No.
And so I'm excited. But yeah, offensive tackle is, and I wrote about this today, actually, on The Athletic, talking about the state of the Chiefs, kind of some draft needs, how, where they kind of sit overall after free agency. And I kind of talk about how with the moves they've made, and, you know, there's some fans who are disappointed about certain things. With the moves they've made it to where the only glaring need, and some people might disagree with this, but I believe it, the only glaring need they have, and by glaring, I mean like, you know those flashlights that are more like searchlights that can like light up a hill five miles away?
Yeah.
It's that kind of glaring need is left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And with that in mind, I think it would be fun to look at prospects, and I thought you might enjoy this. I have only one other time really focused in on one position group with the belief that the Chiefs needed to go that route in a draft. And do you know when that was, Josh?
Was it for Patrick Mahomes?
It was.
Okay.
The only other time I've always looked at a few different guys, and you know that's why I've been high on certain prospects and really low on some other ones.
Right.
Shout out to me being really wrong about Juan Thornhill and really right about Breland Speaks. But, you know, the only time I've ever thought, okay, the Chiefs need to go a certain direction was the 2017 draft, where the season had ended the way it had. Ugly. And there was just a lot of chatter about the Chiefs maybe being ready to, okay, Alex isn't the guy. They might move on. So what I did is I reviewed, it wasn't just Mahomes. I mean, it was, I think, between 8 to 10 quarterbacks in that draft, maybe more closer to 8. And so then I wrote about them individually. Mahomes happened to be the one I did first. And then I ranked them, and it was a lot of fun. And so I'm going to do that this year. And if we have results that are remotely as positive as the last time I did this, that means the Chiefs are going to draft the next Willie Rolfe with this pick somehow. So I'm excited.
I'm really, really interested. And obviously our conversation after you look at the film will probably be more instructive in terms of what we should be thinking. But just as a little kind of preamble, because I did two mock drafts today. I thought this was really interesting for whatever reason. I was doing a part of two mock drafts today with like individual people who cover the team picking for each team, which is, I think, way more interesting than just letting a simulator go on or you make every pick or whatever. And in both of those drafts, neither of them are like out yet, so we're really being vague. But in both of those drafts, I got to the pick at 31. And maybe this is just me being in it for too long, like you said earlier. Maybe you're cannonballing into the pool right now, and man, my fingers are pruny. Like, I have been in this pool for a long time. But I've gotten to 31 most of the time, and I've looked at the tackles, and I've said, you know what? I don't feel like there is one guy from kind of this second tier. And something we talked about this with Tucker on the show last night, and we talked about it with Jordan. Like, I'm not sure that there's a guy at 31 who's going to be there at 31 where I say, oh, well, this is a severe upgrade over the guy who will be there at 45 or 50 or maybe there at 63. And I'm curious to see if you have somebody stand out as basically being kind of the clear-cut fourth guy even out of that group, because I've seen a lot of different fluctuations at this point.
Right, and that's what I'm excited about. I think from what I've heard so far, and this is the great thing for me, there are a lot of great draft resources out there. Obviously, what Dane Brugler does with The Athletic is, I mean, it's called The Beast for a reason. I've actually avoided reading that in terms of I don't want to sully my own opinions. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's a real risk, I think, with especially when, you know, I reference draft Twitter. Let me just say, anyone who participates a great deal in draft Twitter, as someone who's kind of on the outside looking in, there's a real risk of groupthink there because outside opinions or opinions that go against the grain just get mocked to death. Not as in mock drafts,
right?
But as in people it's just constant. And I think because of that, you tend to see a lot of reports that I think people don't do it intentionally, certainly. But if like you've read three different scouting reports written by people you respect, on, say, a tackle, right? And they all universally praise his feet. You can't really help yourself but go in there looking for those great feet.
Yeah, sure.
And quite often, when we're looking for something, we'll find it.
Yeah.
And that last sentence there, I think sums up way too much of analysis, including my own at times.
Yeah.
But that's for another day. But if you're looking for something, you'll find it. And what I like to do is kind of go in unsullied. I mean, you know, the Arrowhead Pride guys do great work. Dane does great work. Ryan Tracy does great work. But I try to avoid it as much as possible, at least with the ones that I'm looking for, at least positions I'm looking for, because I respect those guys so much. So I'm excited. I get to go in this, like you said, I'm cannonballing into the pool while everyone else is like, you know, if I get out right now, I could really get a pizza or something.
Right. I'm definitely sunburnt right now, for sure, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sitting here with the basketball going to the deep end like, guys, dunk contest? Huh?
Right.
And it's going to be great. I'm going to annoy people. I'm kind of excited for it.
The one other thing, and this is more something else I think we can talk about before you get into the individual pieces of it. It's also just something when I've looked at, and this is also just now an obscene number of draft boards. And, you know, like we can talk about the edge class and how much I think Brett Veach wants to take another edge and how likely I think that ultimately is, or the wide receiver class and a guy, really a number of those guys who could be there in that round. Like, whoa, what if X, Y, or Z guy falls an extra five spots, and he's there at 31. The one thing that frustrates me, or that I guess I'm nervous about, I guess, is the fact that you're going into a draft with a glaring weakness. Like, I could really give or take Austin Blythe. I could have given or taken Austin Ryder, and I probably could have given or taken some other professional center named Austin. It wouldn't have really moved the needle for me. But I'm really glad they signed one of those dudes.
Yes.
Because it doesn't feel mandatory that they find a center in the first couple of rounds. I really wonder, and this also might depend on how deep you go into the draft class of the tackles, I wonder if they feel like there's somebody at 31 they're really confident in, or if they think, you know what, we're going to find our Lucas Niang of this year, somebody who opted out last year, or somebody who maybe had an injury a couple of years ago, or something later on that doesn't force us to draft a certain position at 31, just because I hate being forced to draft the position like that, because you might be missing out on the best player on the board, and you might be really settling for lineman 4 or 5, who maybe shouldn't have gone until later. Again, those are all in vague enough terms now that I'm not sure it's worth anything, but I am curious how you felt about that to this point. Also knowing that Okung and Villanueva are both still technically out there.
Right. I think one advantage the Chiefs had with Niang is they thought they had time, you know?
Yeah.
And Andy Reid, generally speaking, with important positions, it seems like you'll often see them do things a year in advance. And that's one of the luxuries you have with a roster that's largely set. And you kind of alluded to this, like not having glaring needs headed into the draft. When you are pretty set, you know you're a Super Bowl contender, you're comfortable with the team you've got, you can draft for needs not this year, but next year or the year after. And I think that's what they were doing with Lucas Niang. You know, there was a lot of talk, you know, maybe he'll move inside to guard, that kind of stuff. And you and I even chatted about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think with Lucas Niang, that was an acknowledgement on their part that half a decade of elite on one side and good on the other side tackle play is rare.
Yeah.
Like, this is the exception, not the rule. Guys staying pretty much healthy every year, especially Schwartz, right? Till last year, he never missed time. Fisher missed games occasionally, but not very often. And I think that was an acknowledgement on their part that this can't last forever. Yeah. We're eventually going to have to replace these guys. They were getting a little long in the tooth regardless. It just is what it is. But they thought they had time. And specifically, I think they thought they had 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And with Niang, great pick for that sort of thing. Super talented. I'm excited to see him at right tackle. I have a hunch that he beats out Mike Remmers for the job, mm-hmm. which people can roll their eyes at that. But Remmers played above average, not a lot, but a little above average right tackle all of last year.
Yeah.
And it kept the team from falling apart when they lost Mitch Schwartz. That was important. And I love that they brought him back because it's kind of a, you know, you and I talk about this all the time, the roller coaster thing. You must be this tall to get on the ride. You must be this good to play right tackle for the Chiefs now. That's reassuring. But with him, they had time. Whereas now, they don't. And that's a huge deal when you're talking about rookies along the offensive line being able to play right away. And I think that matters a great deal looking at what they decide to do this year. Like you said, there's Okung and there's Villanueva. Those are the two veteran options. The opinions I get on Villanueva vary. I've had a couple people I really respect say, you know, he wasn't great last year, but he wasn't terrible. You know, he's average. I got to tell you, I'd take average at left tackle right now.
Sure.
Then I've had other people say, oh, he's completely cooked. He's garbage. Can't play anymore. I have no idea. I haven't watched him. Haven't charted his snaps. I watched a little, and I was like, I mean, these snaps aren't that bad. I understand that, like, Carl Lawson and a few others did obscene things to him on national television. Mm-hmm. But how do I phrase this? Fisher generally struggled against elite competition as well.
Yeah.
So if you end up with a guy who is an average player who's going to get beaten by elite guys but can get you there most of the time, it's either that or what? Yeah. Okay? That's my thought on Villanueva right now. Hardly a ringing endorsement. Okung, it's injury stuff, right? He's gotten injured multiple years in a row. I still think they ought to sign one of those guys. To crud, sign both of them. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Do something, because you end up in that situation where you don't have that roller coaster guy. You don't have that. It's we're going to draft a left tackle, and by God, he's got to start. Mm-hmm. Or we're starting like Yasir Durant or someone who, I don't know. So that's kind of where I land on all that, is they are put in a more risky position than they generally have been over the years. Even with a really important position like quarterback, they had Alex Smith in place. And you and I one day should do a what if on what would happen if they had started Mahomes in 2017. Because I have theories.
Yeah.
I have so theories.
Yeah, me too.
Because the offensive line was better than it's been any year Mahomes has been the guy. But again, you know, whatever. I have theories. It worked out awesome the way they did it. Alex had a career year, got himself paid bank in Washington. Good for him. They still played it safe. They gave themselves time. And that's one thing that I keep trying to emphasize to Chiefs fans. In terms of this offseason, a lot of people are upset. And they're not as upset now. I think getting the surprise signing of Jaron Reed, which they got lucky with.
Mm-hmm.
I think that helped assuage a few things. Getting a competent center in place, that helped assuage some things. But really, they just dealt with something that is really hard to deal with, because there are not good left tackles on the market. It just doesn't happen. They had one in Trent Williams, and they swung big on him and missed. Yep. And that puts you in a tough, tough spot. But I would just say to Chiefs fans, welcome to what half the NFL feels yearly.
Yeah.
When it comes to the tackle position, more than half, if you're including both tackles. It has been the exception in Kansas City the last 5 years, not the rule. And so I'm nervous.
Yeah, well, so there's kind of a two-pronged thing. I think we've ended up covering one of the prongs of, because I'm just kind of, again, as a pre-conversation before you get into all the prospects. I was going to ask how you feel about it as one part of it. I think you've answered that. The other thing, though, is I'm curious, in as concrete or vague terms as you need to properly answer this, what are you looking for? Whenever you go through, maybe it's, you know, 5 to 10 guys, whatever you end up doing, of guys who might be in that 31-ish range, what are you looking for as you're going through their tape?
You know, I actually asked myself this question earlier today, because normally what I would do, I have access to film with NFL stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't have as much with college stuff. People trade it back and forth. I'm not involved in that. So I, you know, barring a bunch of people who owe me favors, me cashing them all in tomorrow, right, I don't see that happening. So charting wins and losses and neutral plays becomes a little more suspect.
Yeah,
because you're not doing it from the right angle. What you can
you're also
do is
not
look
doing it against, like, it depends on the competition. So yes, the competition level fluctuates so much in college.
And that was the second thing I was going to address there. Your film angle isn't ideal. No, you nailed it. And there's such a fluctuation of quality of competition that you find yourself looking more at traits. Yeah. And this is one reason why I think it's so hard to, everyone views offensive line as a safe position. Mm. I personally think once you're outside of guys that you view as like surefire first rounders, it's not that safe, because you're still looking at traits, and you can't, some guy dominating against, you know, Northwestern is very different than them dominating against Alabama.
Yep.
Just two very different things. And plus, that's also a position where the difference between a 20-year-old and a 24-year-old in terms of body development, strength, you don't know what guys are going to fill out. You don't know what guys are going to... It's just tough. So the things I'm going to look for, it's going to be more traits-oriented. Normally, what I do, it's performance-oriented, right? Mm. And then I talk about traits alongside the performance to try to project whether that performance was lucky, not lucky, might get better, might get worse. It's a good system. I love it. Can't do it with this. Yeah. So instead, what I want to do is look at traits, specifically in terms of the Chiefs system. I want to look, you know, foot speed and the ability to actually pass protect. And by actually pass protect, I mean take actual pass pro sets, horizontal, vertical, in which you are actually being asked to defend against an edge rusher on a drop back, preferably out of shotgun. That's rarer than you might think at the college level. And so I want to look at foot speed, and not just the foot speed, but technique, whether or not that, you know, is what they're doing equivalent to what they'll be asked to do, or do they show the traits that show that they can do it? And so you're just looking for things like foot speed, punch, arriving on time to your marks when you're asked to get out in space, that sort of stuff. It's going to be a trait-based evaluation, and then trying to project whether that works well in the Chiefs system. The biggest thing, though, honestly, and this is going to sound so... I really view evaluating college players, because you can't do like the stuff that you can chart and project that nearly as well, because the problems you laid out and I laid out, some of it is just you look and you see it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that sounds ridiculous, but you can see, especially like with tackles, you can see what happens when they get their hands on an edge rusher. Are they freezing him in his place? You know, are they just stopping him in his tracks? Are they clearly powerful? You know, Chiefs fans, think of Willie Rofe, right? Is he just freezing a guy in place and clearly more powerful? Or does he get moved? Is he easier to toss off balance? You can just see these things, and you have to trust that part much more with college evaluation than with pro evaluation. And that is why it's so hard to evaluate college players.
This is an additional thing, or the answer may just be no, but do you care about arm length at all? Because the thing that I find interesting about it is something that I still don't feel like I totally understand. I understand the difference if you've got a 5-inch differential from your arms to another prospect's arms. I understand where that comes in, but it really does seem like there has been historically, an Andy Reid sort of cutoff. I don't have the number in front of me, but it's out there. In fact, a former friend of the show who's now dead to the show is the one that did the math on it, and I hate crediting him, but he's the only one I've seen do that math, so I can't credit anyone else. It really bums me out. But it does seem like there's some sort of cutoff line. I don't know. Is that something that you look at before you watch the tape, or something maybe you look at afterwards so you're not looking for sure? I don't know. How are you gonna handle that? Do you care at all?
I don't care. And if I end up wrong, I end up wrong. What I'm doing, I tend to, and this is where the work even of people who are dead to you is important, in part because they're attempting to project what they think the Chiefs will do.
Right.
I'm writing what I think the Chiefs should do.
Yeah.
And I think having a cutoff, like a hard line cutoff for arm length, unless that cutoff is like, you know, 31 inches or something. And even then... Well, no, that's pretty short arms in terms of a tackle. I think having a hard line cutoff is stupid.
Yeah.
I think you look at a player, can he get it done? It's kind of like, you know, some people saying, well, we'll use an example of Mahomes, and you don't see this type of thinking anymore. And I think Mahomes is a big reason why, as well as some of the other guys who have had success in the pros now, that they're becoming more and more flexible. The difference between how, you know, ad-libbing guys are seen now and guys who don't necessarily utilize the perfect form, the perfect technique, like with footwork, etc., like a quarterback. The difference now, if you want to know how it's so different, think about like how Zach Wilson might have been perceived 5 years ago versus now.
Yeah.
And I think guys like Kyler Murray and Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, guys that are succeeding in unique ways, I think that's a big deal. So, but I'll use Mahomes as an example, maybe before this revolution, right? There were people that would say, like, you know, I mean, no, his footwork's a mess. And then, boom, move on.
Right.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. Because you're asking yourself, well, why do we care about footwork? We care about footwork because it, generally speaking, messes with velocity and accuracy. So if a guy's footwork is a mess, but he's still consistently got great velocity and is very accurate, who cares?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing for me with arm length. If you've got a guy whose arms are 2 inches shorter than another guy's, but he's consistently playing really well, you know, why do we care about arm length? Well, we don't want defenders being able to get inside their pads and bull rush and long arm through them. It's things like that. If it's a guy that's not really happening to him, like ever, who cares?
Yeah.
And that's obviously matters with quality of competition. And that's, again, the college issue. But for me, I'm not going to look at that. I'm going to assume the guys that are entering the draft as offensive tackles have at least 33.5-inch arms. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it just becomes a matter of an inch, and that just doesn't matter to me.
Yeah. You heard it here first. Seth doesn't think you know adding or subtracting an inch is that big a deal. Like it just doesn't really move the needle.
Well, my real opinion, which if you think of the whole thing, it's when you've already got so many inches, it just doesn't matter.
Right, of course. Yeah.
I cannot believe you got me to say that. Oh, yep. Brand is hurt.
Yep. Nope. We're going to have that's a liner. We're going to have a clean cut of that. And I got to go. I'm going to see if I can get to a trash can because I got to barf. and if we were a little later.
I let you goad me into saying that. I'm weak.
If we would have gotten a little farther into this segment before you would have said that, I would have ended it right there. We could have just thrown the break and moved on. But it's still relatively early by our standards. But also, yes, funny and gross.
Yes, that's kind of that's my sweet spot of humor.
Yeah, it really is. You mentioned the piece you've got up on The Athletic right now, and we've covered all this ground in one form or another over the last several weeks because it's not a whole lot has changed.
No.
Over the last several weeks. But and we've talked about the void being left at left tackle at this point. But upon further review, is there anything new that came to the surface for you looking back at the Austin Blythe signing and the Jaron Reed signing, maybe even Kyle Long or Joe Tooney?
I think just for me, viewing them all in their entirety, in the moment, because of, you know, the big disappointment when they didn't land Trent Williams, mm-hmm. then how slowly a few things shaped up after Tooney was signed right away, it really was easy, like, walking in, it's like, man, you know, they didn't do anything, this is a disaster, they're in a lot of trouble, right? And I think it depends on who you talk to, because there are still people that believe that they're in a ton of trouble, and maybe they are. Who knows? But what surprised me is when I looked at it all from 5,000 feet in the air in its entirety, how few big needs they have, mm-hmm. which that surprised me because I really felt like it was different. The left tackle thing's a big deal. I would argue to most people, you know, people, they should have been prepared for this. Come on. They thought Fisher was entering the final year of his deal. I have no idea. You know, I've never talked to Brett Veach about this. But given Fisher's age, I'd be willing to bet that what they would have done had he not gotten injured, he probably would have been extended prior to this final year of his contract. Mm. Added a couple years. Mm. Lowered his cap hit that way. It just didn't work out that way because he got injured. Was it February yet? I mean, it was the AFC Championship game.
It would have been towards the end of January.
Yeah, it's just the worst possible time for an injury like that. And in the final year of his contract, they literally couldn't keep him on the roster. And there was no magic to be done with the contract because of it's in his last year. You can't sign a guy to a contract extension not knowing how his rehab will go. There was nothing they could do about it. And I would just continue to push. And I really have hammered in on this a lot because I don't think people realize this. It was just one of those things that just is unfortunate at a position that's incredibly hard to replace.
Yeah.
It's much easier to replace a wide receiver than it is a tackle. Just because, at least if you're talking like an average guy or an above average guy, because there just aren't that many guys walking around that are 6'6" and 315 pounds and can move. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of guys who are 6 feet tall mm-hmm. and really fast. Mm-hmm. And so once you take a look from 5,000 feet in the air, you've got that left tackle gaping hole. But when you look at the offensive line, I'm very comfortable with Tooney, Blythe, and whoever wins between LDT and Long at right guard. I'm very comfortable with that. I'm actually very comfortable with right tackle. With Remmers, who we know is an average guy, who isn't going to hurt you at right tackle, and might even help you a little bit. And Lucas Niang, if he beats him out, all the better.
Yeah.
I'm pretty comfortable with that. I'm pretty comfortable with their linebackers being Anthony Hitchens and Willie Gay. They need some depth there, but I'm pretty comfortable with that. Comfortable with their cornerback group, although, you know, Bashaud Breeland, I keep feeling like he's just been re-signed.
Yes, 100%. I've said that on this show. I feel like in the back of my head, I believe that he is a member of the Chiefs again.
And he's not.
But he's not. It's not happened.
It feels like inevitable, though. The Chiefs are going to go up to him and say, look, man, here's a one-year, $3 million deal. It's a lot of money. I know it's not a lot of money for competent cornerback play, but come on. Mm-hmm. Until then, I'm not super comfortable with the cornerback room, but I don't completely hate it. Had they not brought back Ward as well, I still think they need more high-end talent there. Yep. If they bring in Breeland, I'm comfortable with it. safety room I'm really comfortable with. Basically, I was surprised how much I was comfortable with on the roster.
Yeah.
After an offseason that felt like a disaster.
Can I be not necessarily an alarmist, because I don't really think this position is going to make or break the team either way.
Do it.
But I do think, I think we're giving a lot of credit, I think, to Willie Gay as being like, he's just going to be the number two backer next year, and he and Anthony Hitchens will be the guys on the field most of the time. You'll have a little Ben Neiman, maybe add some depth and everything. I also really like Willie Gay. Like, I was excited when they drafted him. I was excited after, you know, reading your film review about him, and I wanted him on the field sooner. Everyone probably at this point knows all of those things. But I do think that he might be the guy that we are overextending over the course of an offseason. We always have a guy like that, right? Say, well, next year he's going to take a jump. Whenever those jumps aren't always guaranteed, and we just got so little of it last year. Like, just mm-hmm. the smallest. We didn't get a taste. We got a smell from, like, the other side of the street for, like, an apple pie that was sitting out on a windowsill like a Tom and Jerry cartoon. I don't know. I'm not necessarily hitting the panic button, but I do think Willie Gay is getting, honestly, he and Lucas Niang both are getting draft slot and like team confidence, even though we haven't seen much from either of them, literally anything on the NFL level for Niang, I guess. But I guess I'm also buying into the Niang hype enough myself that mm-hmm. I'll be nervous if that's wrong. But also, you mentioned, that's a legit competition with him and Rimmers.
Yeah.
Right now, there's not a veteran linebacker for Willie Gay to compete with. It's just him and Anthony Hitchens.
Absolutely. And that's an awesome point. A lot of my stuff with Lucas Niang, I like him. I liked him when they drafted him. And so I think he does get a bit of a bump from that, yeah. right?
Yeah.
He clearly has. If you watch his college stuff when he's healthy, he clearly has great feet for a guy his size.
Yeah,
and he's strong. He's big. I think he's got potential to be a good one. The big thing with him is the Remmers issue, that they've got a right tackle that played the vast majority of last year and played pretty well.
Yep.
Before, you know, that whole thing in February.
Right. you're right.
And so, provided they don't ask him to play left tackle with a completely depleted offensive line against an awesome pass rusher, I think he'll be fine. Mm-hmm. I think they learned that.
Yep.
So. The difference with Willie Gay Jr., I think, is a really good thing to point out by you, that they really did not get him on the field much. And just when it seemed like they might, you know, he got hurt. And I think he is getting a lot of, he's kind of getting that there's still some secrecy there bump. And yeah. to use the smell analogy that you gave, he's getting the smell benefit in food that smells great. Until you taste it, you're not going to know.
Right.
But he's clearly really athletic. He's clearly really physical. I think he deserved to be on the field more.
Yep.
And I think Spagnuolo is just really into his smart linebackers. And, man, they got to know the system up and down, back and forth. Kind of like the, you know, Andy Reid with wide receivers sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I've convinced myself successfully that an offseason will be enough to resolve that, because otherwise it'll be Hitchens and Ben Neiman, and I have different feelings about that.
Yeah. I am more the optimist, I think, on Willie Gay than what I'm about to say, but like, there's also, like, I haven't heard a single human being who talks about the Chiefs mention that maybe Willie Gay is Dorian O'Daniel drafted higher. Like, I don't think that's true, and I'm not trying to tell everybody that that is going to be true. Honestly, I don't really enjoy being a hater. It's not a whole lot of fun. I don't really want to do it here either. But it just, there's still a chance of that, because we just don't really know. And there's not really a safety net there. But
right.
Yeah,
I would say in the limited sample size we got, his film is different from O'Daniel's. He's more physical, and he looks more comfortable in zone coverage. Yeah. I didn't see any like blatant, like, dude, where are you going mm-hmm. snaps in zone coverage. But definitely, I mean, being really athletic tends to pop.
Yeah.
And I can show people, anyone who wants to look, I can show you snaps of Dorian O'Daniel that'll make you go, why is that dude not on the field?
Yep.
Which, sometimes I wonder why that dude isn't on the field.
I still don't know the answer. I was wondering if you were going to try to answer that
question. That one bugs me. They obviously drafted him with a bigger role in mind than special teams ace. I think he's been really good on special teams.
Yeah.
And occasional, hey, they've got a good running back, so we're going to get you out there and have you play man coverage on that running back. Mm-hmm. I think they drafted him with a bigger role in mind, and I have to assume that it's just the mental side of things that caused Bob Sutton and then Steve Spagnuolo to not trust him. Yeah. So there's a chance that could happen with Willie Gay as well. I just don't want it to. So, right. Yeah, it's a risk, though. I think he's definitely bigger and more physical on tape. And so I think that should help, because then you don't end up with two strikes against you. Because with O'Daniel, you got to be elite in a lot of areas to stay on the field when you're that undersized.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Okay, very last thing here, then we got to get out of here. I wanted to talk to you about Andy Reid texting pictures of the Lombardi Trophy to Juju Smith-Schuster. I think there are a couple fun takeaways from it. I think there are a couple of serious takeaways from it. What did you think of that story?
That's just something I pictured Andy Reid doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's hilarious, and yeah. I love that about him. I can't believe Juju said no to that. I really can't. That blows my mind. The ability of players to say no to Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes this offseason has been a bit of a, oh, okay, we are still, you know, we're still on planet Earth here. Just because Mahomes right. and Reid, you know, recruit someone doesn't mean they'll get them. On the other hand, the other side of things, I would not be at all surprised to see them go after him again next year.
Dude, you're like the third or fourth person that said that as a takeaway. I think that's fascinating. The only other thing that I'm adding to it is that I think we knew this already. I don't think it's necessarily new information, but the Chiefs really wanted Juju Smith-Schuster. Like, that was very real. That was a very legitimate push. Because if you're kind of interested, you're going to let Brett Veach handle it. If you think that it's going to be a weapon that you're going to make look good, Andy Reid asks for his phone number and starts basically sexting him pictures of the Lombardi Trophy. Because it has to be borderline erotic, you know, depending on how it's lit. So I think that's kind of interesting, just because there was a lot of talk about, you know, would he be a fit? Would the Chiefs even be interested? What are they going to do with a veteran receiver? And Andy Reid was sending Juju pictures of the Lombardi Trophy.
Absolutely. I think you can also have some takeaways about whether or not they think, you know, Mecole Hardman or Byron Pringle mm-hmm. or DeMarcus Robinson can fulfill, you know, some of that X receiver role when it's not Travis Kelce doing it. And that is one thing worth noting. Nate Tice, who does a great podcast with The Athletic, not as great as Times Ours, obviously, but
well,
you know,
listen,
it's good,
except for us.
Very good. He said that a couple times in response to people saying the Chiefs need an X receiver. One thing he said, he's like, well, they do have one who's like 6'6 and 260 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so they don't. It's the need isn't as desperate as people think, because Kelce does play that role. But they obviously want someone. There's a reason they went and got Sammy. And so I think you can see that they are less than enthused about their wide receiver room as well.
Yep.
Which I don't know. I personally hate to lock myself in on something like this, but I'm gonna. Last year with the draft with all the receivers and stuff, I was a big fan of Justin Jefferson for mm-hmm. a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. And I'm very rarely right about things. So I always have to say, oh, no, I really like that guy who turned out to be good. And then, you know, you ignore the bad takes because...
Of course.
You know, yeah. Yeah.
It's Twitter.
I have a similar, like, man, I think I really like this guy more than maybe most, although he's rapidly gaining steam. Rashad Bateman is like, if he like started to fall into like the 20s, started to drift towards the Chiefs, I'd be like, I think that guy might be really, really good as a pro.
I'm gonna have to send you a link whenever a certain mock draft through a certain series of websites comes out, because I think you're gonna be very happy about it. But I can't say who I pick because it's not out yet.
See, I'm excited.
But it might
for that.
Be a receiver that you like very much, who I was very surprised to see fall into 31.
Man, thank goodness you didn't spoil that.
I don't want to spoil it though.
So that's just one thought on it, because there's so many talented receivers in this draft.
Yeah.
But if you want a guy to fulfill a specific role, I don't know if like, you know, Tony or Moore or one of those like or Tooney, however you say it, those smaller guys, is that the way to go? I don't know. Although Bateman's not a huge guy either. The problem is, because this year they're going in with a massive glaring need at one position, there's a reason I'm looking at left tackles, right, and not receivers. Mm-hmm. If Fisher were healthy, I would say I'd be looking at receivers, and that's it.
Yeah.
Because it's a great draft for it, too. I kind of, the receiver thing, if it weren't for that the left tackle issue, that would be so much fun. Because, like, can you imagine if, like, all it takes is one or two teams, because of like Devontae Smith's size, liking Bateman and Waddle better. And can you imagine, like, if the Chiefs traded up to, like, you know, I don't know, like 23 and drafted Devontae Smith? Like, just how much, just the explosion that would occur.
Yeah,
on draft Twitter,
and I would enjoy it. It would be like the explosion last year, but it would be justified.
And so, like, it's one of those things where it would be really cool to see, or like if Waddle falls that far and the Chiefs grab him, and everyone's like, oh, well, a fast guy, that's weird,
right?
You know, because I mean, Waddle's incredibly fat, man. I was watching this film; he's got that like Mecole Hardman, Tyreek Hill gear that is spooky.
I do like that.
I want. Everyone would prefer something like that, but you really, it's a tough thing to do when you've got a glaring hole at left tackle. So the big thing I'm going to be looking at, like you said, I'm going to be looking at tiers and trying to figure out exactly where guys I really like would go. And you know, like, is there someone that I think, you know, like, what do the tiers look like? Are the tiers, is the second tier big enough to where I'm like, you know, you could maybe do that in the second round?
That's what I want to know. That's what I want to know is does your, I don't know if this is the right number, would you be happy enough waiting until your seventh or eighth tackle at the end of the second round as opposed to having to take the fifth one at 31 and then maybe you give Rashad Bateman at 31 or maybe it's
absolutely
even an edge, I don't know.
And it's all going to depend on those tiers, and that's what I'm most excited to write about. So I'm going to review film. I'm going to probably write about one or two of them at a time, just kind of what I liked, what I didn't like, and then when I'm done with all of it, draft in tiers and then give a strategy based on that, right? Like, because there's, let's say I watch and I decide, you know what? I know everyone's saying it's just these two, but I really think there's like five guys in the top tier.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's a guy you probably get a chance to draft one of them. If I say there's two guys in the top tier and then there's two guys in the second tier and then there's a huge drop off, then it's like, you really need to take that second tier guy, right? But if there's eight guys in the second tier, there's just so many directions this could go, Josh.
I'm very excited for it. I got to go. We got to get out of here. I'm very excited for that. That'll be in the Chief of the North newsletter, mnchiefsfan.substack.com or bit.ly/SethHatesMoney. You can also read his new piece up on The Athletic, and a new Times Hour with Seth and myself and our friend and colleague Nate Taylor drops tomorrow. Seth, always a distinct pleasure. Enjoy diving in to the film, and I'm very, very excited to see what comes of it.
Hey, me too, man. Thanks for having me.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
I got two nuggets. I'm happy.
Rudy got two nuggets, everybody.
I got my two nuggets.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Rudy had two nuggets. Rudy now has really one nugget, like maybe one and a half. Gordon's nice.
You could say two. It's just one looks like a chicken nugget, and the other one's just been ripped apart into little tiny pieces. So, like, technically, the pieces are there for one, but, like,
at this point, you've got a gold nugget and a McNugget right now.
Yeah.
That's kind of where you're at. I'd
take a McNugget. I wish we had a McNugget.
I would also like a McNugget right now, ideally more than one. I haven't had some chicken McNuggets in a minute. I would like some. McDonald's, you want to sponsor a radio show?
Sounds good. I'm hungry now.
We have to talk about Rudy's nuggets. He wasn't here last night. I'll open the door for you here, Rudy. Actually, this happened last night.
Yes.
And maybe after the show. Can you set up what has happened? Can you talk for just a second about how your nuggets have been absolutely obliterated really these last couple of nights?
Yeah, I mean, last night especially, just because, you know, losing to Golden State's not a huge deal. Sometimes Steph Curry's just kind of Steph Curry. And then you see Jamal Murray just shatter his ACL into little tiny pieces, like somebody just grabbed it and just started ripping and just, you know, pull chicken, you know, the thought behind it, right? How you get a chicken breast and you just rip it off. Like, somebody did it to Jamal Murray's knee. Somebody just grabbed his knee and started just ripping the ACL off.
It's probably not as tasty as chicken.
Well, it's Canadian, so it's not Mary, you know, it's a Canadian chicken, it's, you know, it's a different flavor.
Is it?
What?
I have no idea. Jamal Murray is Canadian. I don't know. It's a rough time for all of us.
I mean,
the Nuggets season's over. I've come to terms with it.
This is the thing.
It was probably already over before anyways, but like, you know, there's like that little bit of like glimmer, that little bit of hope, right? Like, hey, you know, if LeBron and Anthony Davis aren't healthy and just, you know, you get a couple breaks go your way, yeah, you can make it to the finals. And like, it's just not happening now.
For the first time this year, I will say I hope. What are you laughing at?
Chaotic Warrior on Twitch commented, Dan Campbell was in Denver last night.
Pretty good.
Pretty much.
I think for the first time this year, I kind of hope that Jokic wins MVP. Because I kind of want Rudy to. What I wanted Rudy
have
to
something.
Have. I kind of want you to have something.
Just have something. Yeah.
What I really wanted you to have was a good season that ultimately falls short at the hands of the Phoenix Suns, both teams at full health, sending you into a devastating offseason. But now that it's been, now that your season has essentially ended in mid-April, I want there to be something for you to hang your hat on.
Yeah.
As the Suns meet the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals and the Celtics get bounced out of their G League Conference playoffs. And, you know, the Nuggets have a nice little season and their fat point center wins MVP, you know?
He's slim now, though. He's slim Jokic.
He's Slokic.
It fits for a variety of reasons.
He is definitely Nikola Slokic. Absolutely.
He's both slim and slow.
He's flabby.
I can't argue with it.
He's not fat. That's not fair.
He's flabby, and he's averaging 26 points, 11 rebounds, and 9 assists a game.
It's huge for flabby basketball players and really people everywhere.
The guy is out. He's remarkable.
Somebody's got. He needs like Travis Kelce's barber in the worst way, oof, though. He's got to do.
He has no
something.
Idea what to do with his hair. No
he's
got to.
He needs a little length on top.
Yeah.
He needs a little, even just a better face. Something, man. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he could grow a beard. I feel like if he could, we'd probably know it by now. I think Jokic could be a star. You know what happened to Gordon Hayward once he got to the league?
He had the glow up.
He had the glow up.
He glowed up.
Jokic needs a little bit of a barber glow up, and then I think he's the MVP.
I mean, that's not wrong.
Because also most of the MVP candidates have been hurt.
That.
Like literally all of them, right? Embiid missed a bunch of time. LeBron's missing a bunch of time. Harden is hurt. Obviously, KD was hurt for a long time. Anthony Davis has been hurt for a long time.
Harden was also fat at one point.
Harden was also on another team at one point.
Also huge. That news, I mean. Beards, if I ask you right now, who's your MVP, noting that Jokic has been healthy?
Mm-hmm.
Like, who would you say? Who would you
probably
vote for?
At this point, probably Jokic.
Who would your,
everybody else
who
has
would
been
your
hurt.
Second?
Embiid.
I don't care. I don't care about any asterisks for
no,
why
I,
we get it. I just want him to get it.
Beard, the reason I was asking the question was genuinely because I was hoping that you would have an answer.
Giannis, maybe. Giannis is going to be
you
the
know
one
what,
that's going to be right because he wants
you know
to
what, Beards, you're right. It should be a split award this
get
year between Devin Booker and Chris Paul. I agree with you. Great point.
Second. Giannis for second.
We've got 3 hours tomorrow. We'll talk to Danny Welniak of KZTV5 tomorrow night. Probably somebody else. I don't know. We'll figure it out whenever we get there. Thanks to Kevin James and Seth Kaiser. We'll talk to you tomorrow night. Bye, Mom.
You are listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.